Okay, welcome back. This is episode 10 of 2S Horror Quarters Podcast. We have two special guests joining us today, Phil Wang and Maria Olson. Phil, how you doing?
Great. I'm happy to be here. I've been watching all your podcasts, and I'm happy to jump in and be part of it.
Yeah, appreciate you coming down, and you reached out to Maria, correct?
That's right. Well, let me tell you a little bit about myself, just in case anyone cares or wants to know.
Right.
My name's Phil Wong, and I'm a writer, director, producer. I've produced three feature films, Completely, Totally, Utterly, Geek Mythology, and Outcall, and a couple of other short films. See, other interesting things about me. I wrote and helped produce your film, Gray,
if you don't remember. That's right, yeah.
In addition, what I'm primarily doing now is facilitating my son's acting career. He's 16 years old. His name's Jonah. And he's been in a lot of television shows like Shameless, Nicky Ricky, Dicky and Don, Henry Danger, Game Shakers.
Yeah.
But he does not get his talent from me. He gets it from his mother, Jennifer Lean, who was a pretty successful actress when she was working. She was played the role of Kes on Star Trek Voyager and was in American History X.
Correct. That's right.
Was on a soap opera called Another World, which I think is canceled now, and a little-known sitcom called Phenom. But
Yeah,
you saw that?
Yeah, the tennis.
Yeah, she played the best friend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
very
so
cool.
I'm trying to get footage of that show just to, for family memento for my son to see it. But I even contacted the star, and she didn't even have footage of it. But we're not here to talk about me. We're here to talk about you.
Could have fooled me.
Well, we have to have some warm-up here. Our guest, Maria Olson, has over 200 IMDb credits. She's known for films like Paranormal Activity 3, I Spit on Your Grave, Deja Vu, Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief, Bunnyman Massacre. So here she is, the ubiquitous, the present, prolific, robust, indefatigable, and talented Maria Olson.
I think you forgot irritating on that list. Hi. Thank you for having me. This is fun. Surrounded by Michael Myers.
That's right.
Yes.
He's always watching.
Uh-oh.
Everywhere.
I'll be good. Promise.
Well, Maria, how did a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed ingenue come from South Africa in 2005 and become the queen of horror?
Actually, I'm not that sure. I've been acting. I've been on stage since I was 6 years old in South Africa, but I did a whole bunch of theater and some radio, like maybe two or three commercials when I was still in South Africa. I watched a whole bunch of movies, and I always wanted to do film. So when I finally figured out I was in Los Angeles, I did about a year of theater, and then I was like, you've always wanted to do film, so do it. What is stopping you? I challenge you to do film. So I started to submit online on the casting websites for like every role that could possibly fit me. And eventually I started getting auditions, figured out that my audition technique was really bad because I was auditioning for theater, but it was film, so I would never book. Changed it up, finally found roles that suited me, started booking, and just carried on from there, really. And that's pretty much my story, and I'm sticking to it.
I think it's really important for an actor to know his or her type.
Oh, yeah.
What they realistically can portray on the screen there.
I was actually having a chat with a director yesterday, actually. He offered me a role, which was in a great project, great little role. It's the comic relief, though. And I was like, thank you, but I'm not comic relief.
Right.
I am like super emotional, multi-layered serial killer, not comic relief. And yet I'm even in two minds about saying thank you, but I'm not that to him because obviously I want to work.
Do you take that as a challenge?
No, I don't. part of my mind was saying, this is great and you could accept the role, but you would not be the best thing for the film.
Well, you know, that brings me to one of my questions I noted down here. You do a lot of horror. Did horror choose you, or did you choose it, or is it a little bit of both?
It's a little bit of both. I love the genre.
Okay.
From when I was like 3 years old, and my mom used to speak to me about Dracula movies.
Right.
But also it chose me, as when I started to see my footage on screen from the first short films that I shot, I realized that I was super, super intense on screen.
Okay.
And, you know, I figured out that with that intensity, I would have a better chance of booking in horror, in science fiction, in super heavy drama, things like that, fantasy, mm-hmm. Than I would have in other genres, action, rom-com, or whatever. So I concentrated on horror.
Right.
Because I'm intense. Okay. So, yeah.
You said you changed your audition style. Like, what were some of the things that you adjusted to start getting booked in more films and things like that?
Okay. Theater and film is very, very different. It's both acting, but theater, you project to the theater. You project to the auditorium. Your relationship is with the mass of people watching you. And your performance is bigger, and it's more out there, and it's louder, and it's on the surface instead of internalized. With film, your relationship is with your scene partner, or with the camera, or with some random prop or whatever that you're dealing with that's right in front of you.
Right.
It's subtle, it's internal, it's quieter. And if you're a theater actor moving across to film, you have to realize this and adjust your performance style if you want to start booking in the film genre. Which I eventually did.
And how long did it take for that adjustment? Like, after you made the adjustment, did you start getting booking right away? Or was it kind of more of a still time?
I would say about over 6 months or so. I got into an acting class type thing where we used to meet different casting directors, and our performances used to get like critiqued by the casting directors and things like that. And I realized, it was during that process that I realized I had to change it up to become more film friendly. But when I really started booking film, I remember an audition I had for a short film, which was the first short film, probably the first film project I booked. I have an ability to lock into emotions easily now that I know how to do it. But at that stage of my career, when I was starting out, I didn't know how to lock into a super heavy emotion of a scene, like the scene I was given was somebody crying or whatever. And it was like a radio signal that I found and I ran with, and suddenly I was locked into the emotion of the scene and I was able to cry on cue within the scene, etc. And that was the first time it ever happened to me.
Wow.
And yes, I booked that. That was the first film that I booked. Since then, I figured out, oh, this is a talent of mine. This is something I can do. And I figured out how to do it whenever I need to.
Nice.
You know, which is like a superpower. Huh?
Real
so
quick.
I'm just lucky.
Real quick. Sorry, that haunting voice that you guys don't see. That is Anderson B. Cox. He's a co-producer. He's off camera, so he'll be chiming in with some questions here and there. So,
hello, everyone.
Thanks for chiming in there.
That was a great question.
Hello.
As well.
Yep.
Well, you know, I think just to continue with it, do you think it would be easier for a comic actor become a dramatic actor versus a dramatic actor becoming a comic actor?
Yes, actually. This is just my opinion, obviously. Comedy is something you're born with. I think dramatic acting is more something that you might be able to learn. I don't think one can learn how to act. I think that is a talent that is innate. If you have it, you can hone it. If you don't have it, you're going to have a difficult time pretending you do. Okay? But comedy is something, it's a different thing altogether. It's timing, it's agility of mind, it's on-screen persona. And you need to have that in order to be a successful comedy actor. I cannot decide tomorrow to be a comedy actor. You know, I do a lot of horror comedy, but that's physical horror comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I pull on the physicality I learned in theater for that. But that's all of my horror comedy roles pretty much have been non-speaking. And it's just relying on physicality. But I can't play comic relief. And I know a lot of people say, don't limit yourself. And I'm not doing that. I'm just recognizing what I'm better at and running with that.
So I noticed, obviously, you have an accent. But some of the stuff I've watched, you know, you don't have it, at least to our ears.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that always fascinates me when I see actors that have accents that I didn't know till I see an interview later. And I wonder, how do you pull that off? Like, how it can't be like, hey, I'm going to overnight it. I mean, it's got to be a process, right?
Yeah, it's got to. It is a process. It's an extra step that I always have to be aware of in my head. I can't just speak if I'm trying to be an American character. I can't just rely on something that I learned when I was two and run with it.
Okay.
A part of my brain has always got to be switched on to the, you know, that's not the right way to pronounce that word, so do it correctly.
Right.
And obviously that takes up space in my head. That should be going to what's the emotional through line of the scene, what are my lines, what am I blocking? So that's just an added layer of stuff that I have to work through whenever I'm in a scene.
Okay.
When I'm in an interview process, it's not so essential for me to do that, although I try to...
Right.
Try it, but yeah, every so often my South African accent comes out, hey, and also I can bring it out whenever I want to. So, yeah,
wowzers.
Well, I was told a bit of advice was not to lose your accent, but to gain an American accent.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. I've actually shot a film that was supposed to be set in South Africa, but we shot it here in Tehachapi. And I didn't even need my South African accent for that. I was in a whole different language. I was speaking Afrikaans in that film. So it was a very good thing that I hadn't lost my second language for that.
Right.
Yeah.
No, my father-in-law, ex-father-in-law, is from Norway. And I could hear him talking on the phone back to his relatives back in Norway. And I could see that after 35 years, he lost the ability to really speak in Norwegian.
Aww.
Yeah, so I always wanted him to speak with my son and learn it, but he said his brain would explode if he learned to tried to learn Norwegian.
Yeah, like Swedish and Norwegian, and those languages are very, very different.
Okay, so on I Spit on Your Grave, Deja Vu, there was some uncomfortable scenes, particularly the rape scene. And I just wonder, as actors, and obviously your director and everyone around, how do you, as a team, approach those scenes?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's tough to watch, and I'm sure it's tough to make.
Yeah, it is. It was tougher for Jamie than it was for me. Jamie Bernadette, who plays Christy, amazingly well, by the way.
Yes.
And you have to not only physically prepare yourself for scenes like that, but mentally you have to prepare yourself. I know she did a lot of research on what rape victims go through when preparing for her role as Christy. I play Becky, the main antagonist in the film, and I sort of spearhead a lot of the action against Jamie and Jennifer Hills, her mom, in the film. And my research, shall we say, was watching the parts of the original film, I Spit on Your Grave, that tied into my narrative, my understanding of Becky's understanding of what happened.
There's layers.
There's very much layers. And Becky is, I'm not saying she wears a blindfold or blinkers or anything, but she has accepted one version of what happened between her husband and Jennifer Hills.
Right.
And she's sticking to that, because to even entertain Jennifer Hills' side of the story would be to undermine her entire life.
Right. Right. Now, you were driving that ATV, right? Or what? So
I was.
You did it well.
Thank you.
Is there stunt pay for that, or how does that work insurance-wise? You know what I mean? Because that
I have my helmet.
But it wasn't no real helmet, right? It didn't cover the whole head, so it was more so on top, right? Right. So, I mean, how did that work? I mean, was it like, hey, Maria, just jump on this, you know, and drive
Originally, Becky was supposed to have a Harley motorbike, in the film, but no, I would have been dead within seconds.
Right.
So no. It took a lot of time, actually, before we arrived at the solution of using the quad.
Okay.
And actually, our stunt coordinator, Tony, it was his quad.
Okay.
So he gave me lessons on it, how to drive it, how to ride it, or whatever you do to these things. And I picked it up instantly because I absolutely loved that quad.
Yeah.
So I wasn't apprehensive at all on it.
They probably wouldn't let you go too fast on it, right?
Oh, I was doing my own thing. They let me do what I needed to do.
Is that right?
Yeah, okay. Uphill, downhill, in the cemetery, just wherever. And the interesting part was when I'm chasing Camille in the cemetery.
Right.
And I have the rifle that I'm holding up. My other hand is obviously on the steering wheel, but right. That means no hands are on the brake.
Right.
So what happens, happens.
Where'd you guys film that at?
That was at, I forget the name of the cemetery, but it's the oldest cemetery in Los Angeles. It's in the middle of downtown, almost. Yeah.
Okay, that wasn't the Westwood one.
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
Okay.
No, we were directly in the LAX flight path. So literally every 25 seconds, we were like, cut, plane, stop, plane.
Did you guys film everything in LA?
Yeah, pretty much. In about five or six different locations around the city.
And was there, I'd imagine, for the forest stuff, because in Gray, we had to ADR most of it. Did you guys go back to redub any of that stuff?
Not me. I didn't. There was a rumor that really? I was going to have a couple days, but then I didn't. I think Jamie had some ADR.
Even the stuff inside the van? You didn't have to touch any of that, huh?
Didn't touch. Yeah.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a long cut. That movie went 148 minutes.
2 hours, 28,
yeah.
If that's the same. Yeah. Yep.
Wow. And how many days of shoot is that? This stuff fascinates me because, as you know, Phil said, you know, we had Gray and we had some of Phil's stuff that we did and a bunch of other stuff, some of Brian's stuff, and it can be grueling. And I just wonder, looking at that forest stuff, the cemetery stuff, the ATV stuff, the head gag, you know, the decapitation, how long did that take?
I think the entire shoot took 27 days. I wasn't on every day because there were obviously scenes that I wasn't in, that I wasn't called for.
Right.
I shot 18 days, but they were non-consecutive.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah, it was so much fun.
Yeah.
But it was also a very grueling shoot, as in the emotions that we all had to pull from were like very deep.
Yeah.
You know, and it was physically harrowing as well, especially for Jamie. Like, you know, wandering around the forest wearing nothing but boots,
right,
you know,
right.
Sitting in trees for hours. That scene where she sits inside the tree and we all walk behind the tree
right.
and have some lines or whatever, that took us the longest to shoot, I think, because there was some technical issue with the camera catching us somewhere or something like that. And she literally had to sit in that tree for hours.
Do they cover, in between takes, cover up and things?
No, I think they just left her in the tree.
They don't, I mean, you know, the parts she was
sometimes.
Nude.
Sometimes. If we can, yes. If it's like too remote or whatever, then you know what? You just.
And the cemetery didn't have any problems digging that up to shoot down there?
No, not that I know of anyway. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
How'd you get the role?
I was very, very lucky in that Terry and Mayer and the other producers released the breakdowns on LA Casting. Actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
I never get anything good on LA Casting. It seems like the lesser project. Seems like the better stuff comes on Actors Access.
I know. So I was like, what?
Were you up against a lot of people for Becky?
I don't know. The only time I ever got to see other people was at the callback, and I only ever saw one other person called back.
Okay.
I don't know how many submitted and went through the first round, which was a self-tape. Yeah. I submitted, taped myself tape about, 2 weeks later, submitted it, then never heard back for about a year.
Really?
And later on, we were told that, oh, okay, we then had some work we had to do on I Spit in Your Grave 3 or whatever it was that pushed Deja Vu back for a year or so.
Okay.
Then I got a phone call, hey, we'd love to see you at the callback, same scene, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I came in for a very long callback. I got to read with Jamie, which was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was about in May-ish.
Right.
And then we just pretty much sat there and didn't know what was going on. But obviously, Mayer and Terry and Jan and all the producers and whatnot were doing things that we didn't know about, mm-hmm. you know. And then I think it was in August when I finally got the offer from Terry, as in, yeah, we'd love you to play Becky. I also read for other roles because Mayer likes seeing a lot of combinations.
What else did you read for?
Like Beady Eyes, the two older female roles.
Okay.
Yes.
Right.
I read for those as well.
Wow. Okay.
And I was like, that's nice, but I want Becky.
Right.
You know? And then to learn later from Terry that I was the number one choice for Becky from like literally day one sort of blew my mind, because I was living in uncertainty for like a long, long time.
Right.
You know? And when Terry phoned and said, would you like the role? I'm like, what role?
Yeah.
Oh, Becky. Yes. Okay.
Yes. right.
Yeah.
Okay. What is your favorite part of the filmmaking process?
That one or just generally filmmaking?
In general. So what is your favorite part as far as the whole process?
I think the imaginary world that we go to after the director says action. Then you can really play. You know? You can really just do what you're supposed to be there doing. Okay. That's what I like. Yeah. And it can be just in an audition situation. You know, I've auditioned for a whole bunch of things and I felt satisfied that I played the role once I've done with the audition. Mm-hmm. And that can be enough. That can be enough for me. Often it is. It's all I ever get, you know?
Yes.
And if I actually book it, it's like this cherry, this gift that you're given to continue it to. Yeah.
I just had another question. You said you turned down roles before. How's your feeling if you have to turn down a role? Like somebody offers you something and you have to turn it down. What do you like? Is there any type of emotion to that? Or are you just like, you know?
Absolutely. I don't turn down many roles. But if I'm really not suited for something, I will. That's like age-wise. For instance, I've turned down roles because they were too young. And I'm like, no, I'm never will be that age again, so don't even try, you know? And I've literally had people come back to me and say, thank you for your honesty about that. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm like that. I don't like playing roles I'm uncomfortable playing.
Right.
Maria, I have to admonish you for what the best part of filmmaking is. It's actually great craft services. Especially at studio level.
Oh, we get salmon at studio level.
I remember one time my son was just doing background work, and they came out with food, and I said, wow, this is a great lunch, and assuming that it was lunch. And then, you know, an hour later, they said, oh, we're having lunch. I go, that wasn't lunch. It was already a 4-star meal to begin with, and then they brought another one, and then they had a supper meal, and it was, you know, insane. It was like having Thanksgiving every day.
I remember that from Percy Jackson as well, like 10 different desserts. And I'm like, you're so lucky you're only here one day. You would gain like 20 pounds if you were here any longer. Yeah.
It is amazing that the actors don't gain it's incredible discipline. They don't gain an incredible amount of weight with that much food in front of your face every single day.
Yes.
You know, one of the more interesting aspects in your resume that I thought, why don't you tell us about your documentary, Our Friend John?
Well, I helped produce it, but it's really a documentary that belongs to Edward Payson of An Anti-Hero Productions. I was co-producer, and I'm also in it. It tells the story of Jonathan Hernandez, who sadly passed from sickle cell a couple years back. And at the time, he was writing a short horror movie script, actually, called Rose Thorn. And I think more than anything, he wanted to see this script made into a film. And that obviously wasn't possible once he had passed. But he's one of his best friend's brothers, Edward, is a filmmaker. So Teddy, as I like to call him, took into his head to make the documentary of Our Friend John, where John's three best friends, who are all physically or in some way challenged, actually produce and film John's short film. So we documented the process of Nick Brandon and Garrett making John's film.
Wow, that was so heart-touching to
yes.
that you guys would continue his legacy that way.
Exactly. Alfred John is on the festival circuit right now, and literally it's collecting best documentary awards in almost every festival that it screens at. So, cool.
Well, yeah. I'm getting chills just thinking about it, that the people would have this love for this friend, and they would want to carry on his memory this way, and then, you know, execute his one final wish in life.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, if you can, catch a screening of it. It's wonderful. You know, you laugh, you cry, everything between. Yeah.
You know, Paranormal Activity took off, obviously, from the first one and the extremely low budget on it. And I think they went on to make, what, 5, 6, maybe even more? I think up to 6 now or something.
Right?
Whatever it is. But anyways, they keep going. And I understand you were in 3. What was that process like?
I was called one day by my manager to come into an audition with the casting director, Tineke Becker, who I had met in a class a couple of months before that, and she had remembered me. So I went and I auditioned. I had to sign a non-disclosure agreement before I could even audition. And I was auditioning for a project called Sports Camp, and I'm like, I have no idea what this is, but she called me especially, so let's do this. I booked it, we shot, I had some friends on the shoot that I had known in previous projects, and one of them messaged me a couple weeks after we had wrapped to say, do you know what we just shot? Paranormal Activity 3. And we didn't have any idea at the time that we were shooting or auditioning for Paranormal Activity 3. No clue.
So there was no script related to the subject?
No, not given to us. The coven at the end of the film did not have lines.
Okay.
So it was easy to tell us, okay, you're in this garage doing this witchy thing, come and do this when this happens. You know, we didn't need to see a script.
And once you found out what it was, were you
cool? Super pleased.
Right?
Very, very cool. They also brought me back for Paranormal Activity 5.
Okay.
And I spent a day on set with them shooting another witch's scene. But when I saw the final film, I realized they went with a different storyline, and that whole subplot or whatever it was with the witches again just didn't appear.
Do you find that out the hard way? You got to go watch it, or do they?
Yeah, we were watching it at Paramount. Yeah, wow. Cast and crew screening, and we're like, I was there with my manager. All right, where is my scene? Where's the scene? okay. Well, no scene. Fine.
That sucks.
FYI, Mike, $193 million worldwide.
Yeah.
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 $11,000 budget.
Yep. That's the first one?
The first one.
Yeah, and most of that budget went to the floors in his house, man.
Wow.
he put in new tile work for whatever reason. Maybe because he could write it off. I don't know. I'm just speculating. But a lot of that went to that, man. That's great. Good for him.
How much auditioning do you do versus roles that are just offered to you based on your resume and your experience and connections and...
At the moment, I think it's about 60-40 in favor of roles just being offered to me. Yeah. Which is fun.
Right.
I have a friend who is like, you want to offer me a role? I would really like to audition for that role. So you're sure you're getting the best actor? And I'm like, you want to offer me a role? I will take it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Unless I feel I'm totally unsuited for it, you know? It's hard enough as it is to book anything. So if you're offered something and you like the project, do it. Don't put something else in your way. You know?
Right.
That's just my take on it anyways.
Okay.
You know, I do not have a problem with auditioning. I enjoy the audition process. So if I do audition and book something, that's amazing. In fact, sometimes that is more satisfactory because then it's someone who... doesn't know you, chooses you based on the merits of your work for that particular character.
Right.
You know, yeah. But both is great. Anyway, your book is wonderful.
Right. When you do an audition, do you have all the lines completely down, or do you just do the general basic character of the basic scene?
I have 98% of the lines down. I will never like flog myself over using word B instead of word A. You know, if I say the table, it's supposed to be that table. It's like, whatever, move on. Just click into the emotion of the scene and run with that. That, I find, is more important than remembering religiously every single word, unless it's television. In television, remember every word.
What is your favorite audition?
My favorite audition?
Yeah, the.
My favorite audition.
Then maybe you knew what the role was, or you... Boy, I wish I could have gotten that one.
I think... There's two stories there. I think I'm going to go with my favorite audition as being for the role of Irene Crumb in the feature film The Crumbs, which I booked and we shot in April. The first round, we were given a generic scene from the script and did that, taped it, sent it off. Yay. The callback was an improv scene based on an outline given to us by the director and writer. And I don't know much about improv. I don't take improv classes, nothing. I know nothing. But I just thought about the story, the outline that was given to me. I hung it on a framework of something specific that I had just seen that day as I was driving to the audition venue. And then I just did a 6-minute free form improv telling a story about what I did within the outlines of what had been given to me. And that, watching it back, I can honestly say that I think that was my best work I've ever done.
Nice.
That was this year?
That was this year.
The Crumbs.
The Crumbs. We shot for 2.5 weeks up in Placerville in April. It's in post-production right now.
And that'll be out in theaters?
Hopefully, well, probably not in theaters.
Okay.
You know, the lower budget indies usually go to VOD or DVD, right, or whatever it is these days. Hopefully, closer to the end of this year, that one will be out.
Yeah. That's great. Okay. Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah.
Do you attend horror conventions as a guest or just as a fan?
I have been known to attend as a guest whenever I'm invited. I have a personal appearance manager, Derek Mackey of Cool Waters Productions, who works very hard to get me invited to the conventions, and sometimes we succeed. When I am invited to attend, I love going, but I'd like to go to more. Yay, please, yes.
Please invite her.
What about all that prosthetic work I've seen that you've done, and is... That's got to be time consuming, right? You sit in a chair and, you know, for
absolutely
hours, right?
Hours. My longest was for a concept short film for a feature, which has actually never come out of post-production. I sat in the chair for 8 hours, getting the prosthetic on and the wig on and the finger extensions on and the contact lenses in and the teeth in, then getting the prosthetic painted and everything else painted. That was 8 hours of sitting.
Wow.
Got out of the chair, shot for 40 minutes, lost the light, came back in, took 5 hours to get me out of the prosthetic because we had to preserve it for future days.
Okay.
That was the longest ever. I was an orc. I have pictures.
I've probably seen them. You've posted them, or
no? Because okay, we were told not to post.
Mm-hmm. All right, I've seen some recent ones of quite a few actually that you posted. So you've done quite a bit of prosthetic.
I have.
Work.
I've done a lot of prosthetic work. Okay. Yeah.
What's your level of involvement when you produce a film? I know that you have this MonsterWorks.
Had it. It's been a bit dormant since 2015, because I've been concentrating more on acting. But my level of involvement was pretty much anything that had to be done. At that level of an indie production, I was literally doing script breakdown. I would do figuring out your shoot days, what scenes you shoot when, based on whatever criteria that you're going to use. I would be doing crafty on set for some of the productions that I have done. I would be literally a problem solver on set. You know, had to take an actor 30 miles down a mountain to ER because he got an ear infection at 3 a.m. It's always 3 a.m. So literally, a lot of the pre-production work that I was involved with had to do with the script and script breakdown and stuff. Excel spreadsheets, I love. Going out and doing stuff like location work, line producing, not so much. I don't enjoy that. I like me and the spreadsheet. That's great. Then on set, you problem solver. But that's pretty much what I used to do. Script review. I used to do script review as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's about it.
So were you taking projects, consumption?
That was Live in Fear. That was my first, co-production. Yeah.
So did the other producer come to you and say, hey, let's make this together?
Pretty much, yes.
Okay.
I got an email from Brandon one day, and he was like, hey, I have a role for you in this film, and I'm also looking for a co-producer. Do you want to do this? And I'm like, yeah. Because it was very exciting. It was a lot of fun. We shot 9 days up in Bryan Head Resort in Utah and one day in Los Angeles. And, well, consumption's out there now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, won awards. Nice. Yeah.
So do you have more plans of doing more, productions and, executive producing, things like that also?
If I won the lottery, absolutely. It takes one of the hardest jobs of a producer is to raise funds. To make your film. If you have the money, everything else is easy, really. But it's super difficult to actually raise money. The projects I did, we were sort of kind of at the beginning of the crest of crowdfunding, which made it easier because it was a new, shiny animal. Ooh, crowdfunding, let's make a movie. Now it's everyone and their cat is doing crowdfunding, and it's not so successful anymore. It's harder, much harder. So... no money, no produce.
You know, one thing that makes horror unique is that the villain gets famous. Like, everyone knows Daniel Harris. I only know Daniel Harris because my buddies Mike and Larry dragged me to see hers at the convention or something like that. Whereas we all know Freddy, Michael, Jason, Dracula, Chucky. Chucky. What do you think that's for the horror genre that the villain seems to be more the star than the actual protagonist of the story?
Well, the protagonists pretty much change, for one thing. If you look at something like Friday the 13th, the series, there, almost every single film, you have different protagonist, but the antagonist remains the same. Mm. Also, there's something immortal about the Freddies and the Jasons and the Michaels. You know, they're also very powerful symbols. But I don't know. I mean, I've seen interesting chats on Facebook lately about why do people like Freddy? You know?
Because of his backstory? Is that the question?
Right. Thank you. Because of his backstory. Right. Yes. Why do people still go, yay, Freddy?
Right.
Of course, that's one of the franchises that sort of descended into camp. I'm not saying that's bad.
Right.
I'm saying it went funny rather than stayed scary. Right. You know, so Freddy represents fun.
Sure.
Watching Freddy. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite horror villain that you like to watch?
Me. No. do I have a favorite horror villain? Probably the vampires, whoever they may be. Original Dark Shadows, amazing series. Frank Langella in Dracula, I think that was the late 70s, early 80s. Bram Stoker's Dracula, obviously Gary Oldman rocks. Bill Compton, True Blood. You know, whatever series that has an iconic vampire character, if it's treated correctly with equal amounts of scare and pathos almost, then it strikes a nerve. You know, Barnabas Collins, for instance, and I'm watching the original Dark Shadows right now. Yes, he's a vampire. Yes, he kills people. Yes, he can be terrifying. But there's also this storyline that follows him throughout the series that he is pining away for the woman he loved when he was still human, for Gisette Dupree. And it's this continuing love story through the ages. It's also touched on in Bram Stoker's Dracula, Winona Ryder's character. So love never dies, right? So when you combine the fear and the love, it's got this attraction that's very powerful.
Well, without naming specific films or filmmakers, are there any trends that you dislike or like in the horror genre?
lately I have noticed a trend in the horror genre, and I think it's a good trend. We are getting longer films, okay? Which I think the horror, I personally call them the horror epics. We've had, of course, I Spit in Your Grave, Deja Vu, at a whopping 2 hours, 28 minutes.
Yeah.
Suspiria remake.
How long was that?
Literally pretty much the same time, okay? More than 2.5 hours. Midsummer, which I haven't seen yet, but that's also coming up in 2.5 hours. We've had the rise of female power, shall we call it, in horror.
Sure.
Jamie Lee Curtis, right. Back as Laurie.
Right.
Okay. Definitely Suspiria remake. There isn't a man in the film except for some random cops. All right.
Right.
The one significant male role is taken by Tilda Swinton. Like, what the hell, people? You know, but that's it's a very interesting trend that we're seeing. I think, yes, there's a lot of remakes in horror. Yes, there's a lot of part 12 in the franchise or whatever. But we're also seeing a lot of new and innovative horror that I'm really enjoying. You know, I watch a lot of horror. I watch the big franchises. I also watch indie films or new films or things that push envelopes and take the genre out there into more unexplored territory. So I sort of watch everything. And I never criticize anything because, you know what? It's just different. It's just trying. It's just offered up for your consumption. It's not good or bad or horrible or I hate it. It's the worst thing ever. No, it's just different. And yay for people trying something new. Look at Jordan Peele with what he's bringing to the genre.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I haven't seen Us yet, but I've read about it. I've obviously seen Get Out. And I'm excited to see what he comes out with next.
He's going to be something special. Yes. I wasn't a huge fan of Us, but Get Out was incredible.
Ari Aster as well. Hereditary, Midsommar.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
It's like, whoa, where are these people coming from, and can we have more?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about Exorcist Forbidden Screening. That's over at Universal, I think.
Warner Brothers.
Warner Brothers. Okay.
Actually.
Well, okay, it's a haunt, right?
No, actually, it wasn't. There was a Halloween celebration at Warner Brothers called Horror Made Here, based on all the horror films, a lot of the horror films that they themselves had made, the studio had made. There were about 5 or 6 different haunts, but ours was not a haunt. The Exorcist Forbidden Screening was, I believe it was a 6-minute long compilation of a lot of highlights from the film The Exorcist. And it was set in the very famous church on the Warner Brother backlot. And obviously they had rigged this church up for a whole bunch of special effects and fright effects and things that would happen during the screening of the 6 minutes, the summary, as it were, of The Exorcist. And I was the host, one of the two hosts for the performance. So I would have to get up and say a short speech and then pretty much watch the film with the audience, but also react to everything that was going on around us. It was a lot of fun. It really, really was. But there was a specific thing we did just for Halloween, just for that like month.
So for the entire month, or was it 2 weeks? Or
I think it was a three week run. Yeah.
Is that the one Larry went to, Phil?
I believe so.
It had it over there too.
Yes,
as well?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I heard about that one.
Yeah.
Saw pictures actually. Pretty good stuff. So
it was fun, yeah.
Was it this last Halloween that you did?
Yes, it was.
Do you think they'll have it back again?
I know we will not have it this year.
Was it like not
Warner
successful?
Brothers won't have it, or
I don't know.
I heard it was extremely
successful, but I think they might be going in a different direction this year.
The whole venue.
Maybe to come back stronger next year. I don't know exactly what their plans
are.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe they will revamp and come back. Yeah, like you said, stronger.
Yeah.
So you had a set script, and what was there any improv?
Not that much, actually. Obviously, if the audience interacted with me, I would interact back with them, you know. But yes, I had a set script.
Were you, you said you were the speaker there, but were you a character?
Yes, very much so. Like, I was the person hosting the screening. You know, Yeah, and all of these people were coming to see the screening, the forbidden screening of The Exorcist. And it was this, everything was choreographed, you know. Hit the button for the screening to begin, and everything else sort of started ticking over till the actual time when whatever was had happened had happened. Okay. You know, I started glowing and things fell off the wall and whatever, you know, yeah.
How many performances did you do per day?
Each of us ended up having about maybe 15 performances per night, which was probably a total of about 30. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I also, you might be interested, I also did a immersive game this year at the Overlook Film Festival. We kept that very hush-hush.
Okay.
Because a lot of people had paid a lot of money to take part in this game and didn't want anything out on social media beforehand. So it was like top secret for a long time. But it was this four-day game that was produced by E3W Productions.
Sure.
Good friends of mine. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Part of them, yeah.
And I literally became a New Orleans witch over that weekend, in character the whole time, interacting with people the whole time, out in the real world, you know, as well as in set production pieces all around the city, New Orleans. So that was amazing. It was incredibly tiring, but it was one of the most amazing experiences I've had.
Weren't you Mrs. Whaley in The Haunting of
Yes. Haunting of Whaley House.
Yes. I was. That hit me right now. That's right.
Yes.
And what was that like?
Oh, that was fun. We shot down in Long Beach, actually, at the Dorothy Bambridge House, I think it's called. Mm. That role had actually been specifically written for me by Jose Prendes, who directed.
Wow.
So, and it was a lot of my friends in the film, so it was a really, really good time.
Okay.
Yeah, that we all had. Yeah.
I do remember that now. It just hit me right now. Yeah. Okay, cool.
The Exorcist, it seems like it's, you're going back to your theater roots when you
Oh, very that. Much so. Whenever I perform in front of people, it's the theater switch just goes on. That's why... hint to filmmakers, if you're having auditions for film, don't have it in a theater, because if you have theater actors, their initial response will be to act for theater.
Be loud and big.
Be louder and big. Right. And mm-hmm. Yes.
I've seen that, yeah, in auditions. You know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Would you ever go back to doing theater again?
Or absolutely. The problem with theater is that it takes a long time. 4 weeks rehearsal, 6 weeks run sometimes. I can shoot in 2.5 months. I can shoot 6-8 feature films. I do a lot of supporting roles. I do like one day in, one day out sort of thing. And if I'm tied down to a rehearsal and a performance schedule for theater for 2.5 months, I lose out on a lot of films. So, and a lot of theater in LA does not pay. So if you're pretty much relying it for your bread and butter, you're going to choose the films. Right. Sorry.
Was the Conduit, was that a one day for you?
Yeah, one night, actually.
Okay.
It very much was.
I watched it recently, and I was kind of disappointed you had that smaller role.
I was a flashback yeah, scene. Exactly. Yeah, so, it happens.
Which was actually, The Conduit was actually not bad at all. I mean, for an indie. I thought they had their locations together. Sound was good for me, and I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
What they put together.
We shot in a house in North Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Just that one night on that one. And it actually took a lot longer than it was supposed to because Rebecca Kennedy, who's absolutely amazing, it was her first time wearing the effects lenses and she had to try and put them in herself. And if you've never worn lenses before, it's very difficult to get them in. So that took a long time.
Did they shoot interiors in the same house as the exteriors?
I honestly don't know. I was just there that one day, and we just did an interior house.
Okay, because that house was pretty nice. It was almost like the house we used in the first Gray, kind of like a wide two-story.
Okay, no, this wasn't that house at all.
All right.
Yeah, it was just a normal, smaller house.
Okay.
Well, Maria, is there anything that's coming up that you'd like to talk about that you'd like to share with the audience?
Sure. My next couple projects, I am off to Cincinnati on Wednesday, actually, to shoot a film called Inverted. We're shooting in Indiana, just a little bit away from Cincinnati. And then at the end of this month, I'm going to Buffalo for the first time to shoot a TV series, which I think is going to be a lot of fun. So then I'm off to the Kecksburg premiere in September, and a lot of other things coming up. My latest release is the feature film horror comedy Ashes, which came out on July 9th. So I'm already getting really good feedback about that. So if you feel in the mood, hunt it down. It's called Ashes, and take a watch. So, and I think the next one to be released will probably be Ghost in the Graveyard. I recently saw that at the Action on Film Festival here in Los Angeles, and it's looking really good. So as soon as it comes out, I would say jump on that one.
You're really busy. I'm glad we were able to get you over here.
Yeah, thank you finally. So much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
And Maria Olson, everybody. Yeah. Check her out. You probably already have. She's everywhere. So thank
under
you again.
Every rock. Yeah.
All right. Thanks again, everyone, for joining us. And thanks to Phil and Maria. Episode 10. Thanks to Anderson B. Cox over there in the corner. We're going to continue to build, and we'll see you on the next episode. Thank you.